I think in a normal like acting job where you audition and you, it's very different than what Sarah and I have. We've been working together for 17 years. So I'll do anything for her. And I know I'm never worried about how it's going to come off. It's intimacy. It's intimacy as collaborators. I mean, she could tell me to take a shit right there and I would.
Yes.
I mean, I've been doing that.
Yes.
Welcome to Bitch Talk. I'm your host, Erin, here with my co-host, Ange, aka Captain Party. And over the last 10 years, we've been elevating marginalized voices through interviews and events.
Sometimes over a glass of whiskey. If you're thirsty for more bitches, head over to bitchtalkpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram.
A big thank you to 48 Hills and our listeners for voting us Best of the Bay Best Podcast in 2022 and 2023.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to our Sundance Slam Dance coverage. Today we're highlighting two Slam Dance narrative shorts that are a bit horrific in different ways. Welcome to the Enclave and Legend of El Cucuy. As usual, we're joined by our honorary festival bitch, John Wildman. Enjoy.
We are back on Bitch Talk and FilmsGoneWild.com. My name is John Wildman, the editor-in-chief of Films Gone Wild. With me is Angela Deborah and Aaron Lim from Bitch Talk. On this segment, we're going to talk about the slam dance short, Legend of El Cucuy. We have with us the director, Cynthia Garcia-Williams. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, our audience hasn't seen this film yet, so introduce them to Legend of El Cucuy.
Legend of El Cucuy is a short film about a popular boogeyman in several Latin American countries, and he comes and takes misbehaved children, and usually in a closet, under the bed, in the shadows, all the scary spots of the bedroom. And so this is his origin story, really, and hopefully introduces people that, you know, don't know of El Cucuy, haven't heard of El Cucuy, introduces them to the legend.
I wanted to talk about the bilingual aspect of the short and wanting to know if that was always part of your script, and also casting-wise, anyone that was in the film, did they need to be bilingual?
Yes, it was always part of the script, especially the children. I wanted to make sure that I had children that were... I wanted to make sure that I had Afro-Latinos because there's a lot of... Afro-Latinos, because there's a lot of... the story is told from two perspectives. So the father who knows the story and the mother who does not. And so like for me, my mother's from Cuba and my dad's from Mexico. So he knew about the story, but she did not. And so I wanted to make sure that I captured that. And so, yeah, it was really important to find people who spoke Spanish and children who spoke Spanish. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have some friends with kids that I'd like to show this film to, if you're okay with that. I'm curious how you came up with the imagery of El Cucuy, because it kind of shifts and evolves.
Yeah. Jordan Peele. Huge influence. My cinematographer and I, Ashton Ray, we talked a lot about, you know, that look that I wanted. When we went back in time, the aspect ratio changes. And so we wanted to look like a TV, you know, older. And then obviously the colors. That ranch that we shot out was so beautiful. I mean, everywhere you look, there was beauty. And so, and initially we talked about like sucking all the color out, but I was like, no way. It's too beautiful. So we try to keep some color in there. Yeah.
You know, following up on what Angela said, I want to cut out the middleman and just bring El Cucuy with me on every plane ride.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Yes.
But I want to talk about directing horror. And I think it's really stylishly done here. But stylish also, does not mean it necessarily includes the scares. And so there's a buildup of dread that you need. Of course, there's jump scares, those things, mm-hmm. you know, that we still have to deal with when we make horror films.
Yes.
Talk about that. Talk about how, you know, how you mapped that out, how you approached that to get it right.
Well, you know, I mostly write and direct, like mystical realism, not so much scary. So while it is a horror film, I feel like it's pretty grounded, you know, more in the psychology of the, you know, the characters, especially Laura, and, you know, how she talks about very briefly, you know, the trauma that she's mm-hmm. experienced as a child and stuff like that. And so I think I went more for like the that route, you know, like the what's happening mentally and emotionally for these people, and what happens when a couple disagrees on upbringing, you know, what happens when you start to wonder how much discipline is enough and then how much is too much. So those types of things. So I think I'd go scarier when I do the feature, you know, and then, so I think it'll be it, with the short, it's 12 minutes. So, you know, you try to do the best that you can. Yeah.
I love the casting and I love Isabelle. Can you please tell me, she's the sweetest little girl and you really had to get a lot out of her to be this little brat who you just want to kick in the shin a little bit.
Yeah. She's the sweetest little girl. She is so talented. I mean, she was such a pleasure. Her name is Aubriella. She's on Abbott Elementary and a couple of other things. And she is a joy. I had such a good time with her. And so it wasn't hard to get things out of her because she's a little actress. I mean, she was great, but she's got those big poofy ponytails and you're mm-hmm. like, yes. You know, she was even not feeling well towards the end of one of the days we shot the living room scene. She was coughing in between takes. But man, when we were rolling, she was right back. I mean, so impressive. Such a great work ethic. And her mother has done a very good job with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember the first time you heard the legend of El Cucuy? Were you ever scared of this monster?
Yeah, terrified. Terrified as children. We would scare each other, you know, as kids. It was, kind of like maybe a Bloody Mary here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And then we also had La Llorona that, you know, we'd be sleeping and, do you hear her? And when, you know, I'd visit Mexico, I'm like, no, I don't hear her. Well, maybe I do. Like, I don't know what's happening right now. Why are you scaring me? So we had a lot of little ways that we scared each other. And it wasn't always the parents. It was the kids, like the cousins and stuff like that. Like, who is going to come take you if you don't give me that or whatever. So weird. Yeah, we used to do that a lot.
I also want to ask, because you would like to make a feature version of this, you know, how that goes, because, you know, obviously I'm assuming you have a script already for the feature and what have you. But how you make the short, that can also weigh into how you edit it, how you put it together, mm-hmm. because if it's a one-off, then you go, well, boom, this is what I'm delivering. But when it also is serving as a proof of concept, there's a little, well, I want to tease a little bit. I want someone to be tempted to give me the freaking money I need to make this feature.
That's right, yes.
So talk about that.
Well, that's exactly what I tried to do. I mean, I had the ending in mind from when I was writing the short. And so this film was a part of Netflix and LaLeaf's Inclusion Fellowship. And so LaLeaf really... And Netflix helped us. They had final say on like the script and stuff like that. And so they had me change the end to make it more like, this is the end. There's mm-hmm. nothing else. But then most people that watch it say, what happens next? They mm-hmm. don't believe that that's the end. And it's not. So that's basically how I went about it. All along from the moment I wrote it, I knew it was going to be a feature. So for sure, there's just a lot to tell. Yeah.
Well, you've given us something to look forward to. Again, the project, the short/proof of concept is Legend of El Cucuy. We've been talking with director Cynthia Garcia Williams, and this is screening at Slam Dance. It's been great talking to you.
Great talking to you too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Yeah.
Bitch Talk would like to give an extra special shout out to our caviar bitches, Antoinette Tabora, Annie Tabora, Courtney Keita, aka C-Note, Tim Sika, Sign the Show, and Arabella DeLuco, founder of WeXL.org.
This episode is brought to you by Fancy Bitch Chris Washer.
Okay, we are on Bitch Talk and FilmsGoneWild.com. My name is John Wildman. I'm the editor-in-chief of Films Gone Wild. With me is Aaron Lim and Angela Tabora from Bitch Talk. And on this segment, we're going to talk about the Slam Dance film, short film called Welcome to the Enclave. And I'm going to have our filmmakers introduce themselves so you'll recognize their voices. So, Sarah.
Yeah, so I'm Sarah Lasley. I'm the director of the film.
And Brenna?
I'm Brenna Pelucci, and I'm the actor in the film.
All right, and Sarah, tell us about this film, because our audience has not seen it, so introduce us to Welcome to the Enclave.
Yeah, so it's the story of two Southern middle-aged white ladies who move into a utopian digital community. They don't really understand the internet, and they quickly become inundated by Reddit trolls. And I built it inside of Unity game engine, so it's like inside of a video game.
I was going to ask, how did the pandemic influence Welcome to the Enclave?
Lovely question. Yeah, so it's actually funny. Initially, I had moved to South Texas in 2019 alone, and I was going to Big Bend a lot. I was working on a project about a character named Blair, who's like a spiritual white lady who goes to Big Bend and like tries to transcribe her redemption narrative onto that land, like knowing nothing about the land and its history. We were going to shoot there. Mm-hmm. I was going to have Brenna be Blair. And then the pandemic hit and the border shut down, so you couldn't go to the national parks. So I started tinkering. Everyone was learning a hobby, and I was like, I'm going to learn 3D. So I'm like, tinkering.
As you do. That seems like a natural, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, and so we had a lot of time on our hands. So I was like starting to build this neighborhood, and I was going to move Blair into the neighborhood. And then my mom called me. I'd been having these like conversations with my mom about like race. It was like 2020. Pushing her a lot, and she would always be like, I just want to be comfortable. I don't want to talk about this. So when she heard about what I was doing, and she called me one day and she was like, Sarah, have you heard about the metaverse? It's amazing. Like, she thought that this was going to be like the place where she could go and like be free is like, wow. You know, yeah. And I thought it would be hilarious to move my mom into the metaverse. My little brother is a bit of a meme lord. And then Blair split into two characters, both Moni and Blair. I didn't want to let go of the work I had done on Blair already. So, yeah.
It seemed like a natural thing to do during the pandemic, yes.
Yeah.
And also, you were the perfect bipolar. It was hilarious. I'm a fan of the imagery, obviously. There's a lot of phallic beauty, I'll say. How did you create these images and did you ever think, oh, that one crosses the line? Maybe I'll just 86 that one.
Okay, so we did. So the filming started as a 36-minute version, and before my mother's in it. My mom did a cameo as like a character who's like watching the Twitch feed. And by anyway, so it was this longer project, and we did go too far. Like we had some moments where she's just like overtly racist, like but in a naive way, and like you know just because she's just being Moni. And it freaked us out. We showed it at a salon and people were still empathizing with her. And I was like, okay, we have to retool. And then the internet is like way more perverse, gnarly, racist, sexist than anything in the film. And I had to kind of figure out where that line is. And I decided I would make it far enough to repulse my mother, but that my brother still thinks I'm cool. So it was like that boundary. And also, you know, like I think about this a lot when I'm making work. Like, I want to talk about things that I think, like, cause, like, you know, a harm. But I don't want to re-harm the audience, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you want to like, nod to it, get a little chuckle. But you don't want people to leave, like, activated, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm trying to toe the line with that.
I think it's hilarious that you use your family as kind of, like, the boundaries to work within. You know, it's funny, like, when I would... I used to say, like, you know, when I wrote scripts, I would let my mom read them because she was like the kind of fan who would talk back to the screen. And so I said, well, if she loves it, then it won't be just for my twisted brain. It'll be for people like that, right?
Yeah, there's two of you.
So, yeah, exactly. I would love for you to talk about what I call filling out the frame, because in this, you literally are creating the frame and filling it out. But I love, like, I rewatched it a couple times to watch each of the different little windows and to see like what yes. you were pulling yeah. in. But talk about that process.
Yeah. First of all, I'm a painter. Like, that's my degree is in painting. And so I definitely, I like do visual effects. I love to think about the film frame as like a painting. So that kind of sensibility is in there. But then the cool thing about 3D is you can build like down to the minutiae of inside of the home. And, you know, I just put so much into this scene that I would just chart the camera, hit play and like see what, you know, the gods gave me. So a lot of it was just like deeply nesting content and kind of letting go. Like if something doesn't show up, you just let it go. And then like happenstance gives you this like great like fart meme or something, you know, like, right, I was right, like, right, oh, right, God, right, that's right, incredible. Right. And sometimes I would go back through and like swap things out. I would sometimes send Brenna a cut and be like, is this too much? And she'd be like, yeah, it's like,
the Brenna line also. Yeah,
that's another, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you, because I wanted yes. also to get to Brenna and, you know, when you're acting in something like this, you're at the service of a mind like this, you know, that, you know, sometimes you go, all right, sure. And then sometimes you're going, I'm sorry, what? You want me to do what? So talk about that.
I think in a normal like acting job where you audition and it's very different than what Sarah and I have. We've been working together for 17 years, which I didn't know that number. It's kind of like when you're married and you're yeah. like, oh, wait, yeah. That, yeah. Well, how'd that happen? But so we...
Relatable.
We share okay. a little bit of vision. We share... We're both professors. We're both... it's funny. There's a Venn diagram and she's, you know, experimental filmmaker. And I'm actor, movement, there we just have this crossover, this sweet mm-hmm. spot. So I'll do anything for her, and mm-hmm. I know I'm never worried about how it's going to come off. And it's intimacy mm-hmm. as collaborators. Mm-hmm. So there's, I mean, she could tell me to take a shit right there, and I would.
Yes.
I mean,
are we doing that? Yes.
I don't even have to tell Erin that. She just does it. Yeah, anyway.
No, but that's special, and it's earned. And it's earned, and it's a two-way street. It's not like I'm at the mercy of her vision. Because we don't live in the same place, we talk, we meet, we fantasize, we text, we FaceTime, and then we do that so much that when we get in the same space and shooting, I mean, no one's pushing anyone. Mm-hmm. We're just like, feels very free mm-hmm. to me. It's maybe the most free process I've ever mm-hmm. had.
Aww. I feel like we're in front of like the next gen version of John Waters and Divine. It's just,
I want to be Divine. I'll be John.
I know we're going to have to wrap in a minute, yeah. but I do want to talk about Carly Simon's Coming Around Again.
Yes.
We have to talk about okay. the song choice and then you singing and the dance.
Just losing your shit.
All of it.
So, and I do want to, you introduce yourself as the actor, but also like she's credited as a co-writer because so much of the piece is improv, and Brenna is like an incredible New York improv comedic actor. So I just wanted to say that because she picked Coming Around Again.
Yes. Yeah.
She's the one when I called, because we're such.
No, we were sitting next to each other on my couch. Mm-hmm. And I had my newborn baby at my tit.
Yeah. Oh.
And she was like, this is the idea. And I was like, I know the song.
She's like, I know the song.
And then I just like pressed play. And she yeah. was she was like, ooh.
Yeah.
And that was like the first collaborative Kismet, yeah. moment of for us. She had been working on it a lot more, but yeah. was like, I've got the song.
And I love, I mean, Carly Simon is like our mom's, like, you know, like that's like our mom's thing, like generation. It was like Carole King and Carly mm-hmm, Simon. Mm-hmm. So it also felt like, you know, like my mom doesn't probably let herself like dance to Carly Simon, mm. and I wish she would. And like a part I might get a little emotional, but like a part of this film too is like that her generation doesn't have coping skills for a lot of the discomfort that was thrown at them. And like, we're the ones who are paving that path. Yep. And I wanted this complicated character that you could empathize with, who would have this like swan song moment where she gets free. And like, what does her free look like? Right. The karaoke. So I'm the reigning karaoke league champion.
Plug in the mic right now. We have karaoke machines.
She brought one to Sundance.
No, wait. I always travel with the karaoke machine.
And we're meant to be.
So. I know. I knew it the second I was in the room with you, humping air.
Yes. You did come in real hot. You came in real hot.
I liked it, though.
It was fine. I enjoyed it. Yes.
So excited. I did fall asleep at night being like, wow, you really should have saved some of that. anyway, the choice of karaoke, I've done karaoke in a lot of my films. It's a way to save money on rights, right? Mm. You like chop it in half. Mm-hmm. And then B, it's like, I love to like aim super ambitious and like fail a little. And I think that's what I like about karaoke is like you like shoot for the stars and the more you believe, the higher you're going to get. But there's always this self-conscious moment where you're like on a table, you know? And so, yeah. So it's like, I like that sort of almostness of the final track. And I love singing karaoke.
Mm. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
I'll be here all week, Aaron.
We have a future.
Okay. We just covered more ground than I thought we were going to do.
Okay.
Again, the film is Welcome to the Enclave. I've been talking to director Sarah Lasley and Brenna Bellucci. How do you say it?
Pellucci.
We want to make sure we get that right. actor and also co-writer on this, which is screening at Slam Dance. Congratulations on the film. It's a lot of fun. And thank you for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
This is amazing.
Awesome. This is just part one. We'll have you back on, obviously.
Yeah, please.
No, listen, I don't know if we'll see you guys out, but listening to you, I'm like, oh, man, I just want to, like, have a drink with them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, we were hoping for... You know, Sarah said you like to talk about pussy juice. So
I totally I didn't even mean to say I'd take a shit in your living room. I'm like, come on, Brenna.
Are you kidding?
That was highly appropriate.
But I'm saying, whenever you need someone to be talking about that, I'm happy to.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. You can find more information about this episode in our show notes.
If you're missing us, you can visit us at bitchtalkpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter and buy us a cup of coffee.
Did you know we're also on the radio? You can find us at bff.fm.
And lastly, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. All the cool bitches are doing it.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.